Welcome to the Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we're on location in Highland, Indiana at Mrs. Dornberg's Culinary Experience with Cheryl Dornberg. All right, good morning, Cheryl. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be there.
So I usually start every show. Just tell me about a little bit about yourself. Personal, not personal, whatever, just kind of throw some stuff out there. Who is Cheryl?
Well, I am a chemical engineer by degree, which is always something that people find interesting. I grew up in Merrillville, Indiana. I went to Merrillville High School. I was, very geeky in the math and sciences, and back then girls were pushed into engineering, so I think I was kind of pushed in there more than chose it. And then I had to decide which engineer I was going to be, and that was interesting. I was kind of afraid of electricity, so I didn't want to be an electrical engineer. A civil engineer, I felt, well, then if I built a bridge, I'd have to drive over it. Would I want to do that? So that didn't seem too exciting. So then I thought I really did like food, and I liked science, and I liked experimenting, so that's where I went to chemical engineering. And I felt that I wanted to go into the food industry.
Okay.
I went to Purdue, had a food engineering program.
Oh, wow.
But I actually ended up at Northwestern, and so they didn't have that, and so chemical was the closest to that. So my goal was to work for Kraft or M&M Mars. Ooh. Or Procter & Gamble, making foods, and
gotcha.
I took a tour of the Mars plant and how they made Snickers, and it was, it was all fascinating. And circumstances just, I had my mother passed away when I was at a young age. My dad was, kind of sick. So I wanted to stay in the area. I ended up co-oping with Amoco, which is BP now. I ended up working with them afterwards, and so I did that for 8 years, skip ahead. I met my husband at Amoco, and I was still in my late 20s, and I decided I was going to try this food thing. So I opened up my business, never even working in the food industry, never McDonald's, never anything.
Wow.
We got this contractor, we got this thing. I opened up, at that time it was 24 Karat Cuisine. I did a lot of catering, box lunches, things like that for LT. For BP, for a lot of the big companies. A lot of them aren't here anymore. And shortly after that, I started doing a meal program in addition. So I started cooking for people on a regular basis, similar to a Seattle Sutton, but a little more choice there. I did that for 17 years.
Uh-huh.
And then about 6 years ago, a lot of people were coming to me with health issues, asking me advice, and I felt that I really needed to give them the knowledge that they needed to start cooking for themselves and to live a healthier lifestyle. So for 6 years now, I have been teaching, and that's when we rebranded to Mrs. Dornberg's. It was Mrs. Dornberg's 24 Karat Cuisine for a while, kind of the transition. Then when we went strict to teaching, I went to Mrs. Dornberg's Culinary Experience. And then 2.5 years, we moved into a larger space that is built for teaching. When
okay.
I first started teaching, I had a little Bunsen burner on my table. I didn't even have the nice stoves or the monitors that I have now.
Back to the chemistry part of it.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And, and that's the whole thing. In my mind, everybody says, well, you have this engineering degree. You never use it. I said, I use it every day. And anybody who knows an engineer, there's a way they think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a method. You can grasp the process. There's that curiosity. There's that why. And especially female engineers. Female engineers tend to have a little bit more of that. You see them really branching off, not into true engineering. They usually do go off into something else. I am an engineer through and through, and I use that to my advantage all the time. That's why I can orchestrate what I do, I think. That's that whole part. And then, just because of my own health struggles, what I've seen with people, I've had Crohn's for, over 40 years now. And, I've gone through ups and downs and all around with that. And I know that how you eat and how you live your life makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that with diabetes, with heart conditions. And I really feel that we have the ability to help ourselves and to make ourselves feel better, and we just get sucked in with all the shiny objects that tell us it's going to do it or do that or do this. And I just really like helping people find their own inner strength and trying to overcome obstacles, and I have found that through cooking and food. You know, my obvious hobbies, of course, I cook every day. People are like, you don't cook when you go home. I say, yes, I do. I mean, I will come after being here and I will cook at home. We maybe go out to eat once a month at the most. I mean, we very rarely go out.
That's definitely not the norm.
No. And, you know, but it is so ingrained in me and so habitual. And, you know, I know anything that I make is going to be better than what we eat.
And I'm sure you're ultra critical of wherever you go.
No, I'm not. People think I am. Yeah. And I think that's why we never get invited anywhere, because they're all afraid to cook. And I'm like, no, you can make a hamburger on the grill. I don't care. You know, that's getting together with people. And that's part of the whole thing, too. I think people look at us more as experts, and they don't ever, I can't, you know, I'll be afraid to cook for Cheryl. And, you know, I think it's great if you want to, you know, and I'm happy. I don't, people always come up to me at parties and, well, what do you think of that? What do you think of this? You know, and I won't do it. I'm just like, oh, it's fine. And, you know, maybe they watch my choices. I don't know what I choose to eat and what I choose not to eat. But, you know, it's more about the camaraderie and getting together.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then, you know, I do live in Munster. We live on a creek, so we have a lot of critters that come around. We have a garden. This year we had to put a electric fence around the garden because the groundhog was eating everything, and he's still getting through, so I don't know next year. But I'm married. I have no kids, but we do have three cats inside, and then I kind of have adapted a little bit outside. We have a few feral ones that I've trapped and got them fixed and all of that, so I try to do my part in that way.
Well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. So just kind of going back to the business, the 24 Karat Catering, when did you originally start that?
That was in 1996, so we just passed 21 years.
That's awesome. And it seems like it's truly been just kind of an evolution to where you are now.
It is. I think to stay in business for 21 years, you need to change. You need to evolve as a person, as a business. You know, you need to just make the changes that need to be made and to keep yourself fresh. You know, I think I get bored with things before other people do.
Sure.
You know, and so you got to keep things fresh in your own mind.
Definitely. And so 21 years. So obviously you have some of the business stuff figured out. I think a lot of times smaller businesses struggle with that part of it. They have the passion to do something, but then the business guy side trips them up or slows them down. In the beginning, how long did it take you for that side of it, or did that come easy to you?
I think that's ever going. I think that's still happening.
Well, that's true.
You know, I like to call myself an accidental entrepreneur.
Okay.
So many entrepreneurs, and I'm sure a lot of the people you have interviewed, they knew from day one. They have that spark. They have that flame. They know that's what they want to do. They jump from business to business. They, you know, develop it. They want to leave. You know, I don't ever want to be out of my business, you know, and I had some people try to help me make it into a turnkey so I could, like, walk away from it.
Gotcha.
Mrs. Dornberg's isn't Mrs. Dornberg's without me, and so I am right in the center of it. And, you know, that was never my goal, to be the business owner. It was kind of just to follow my passion and to help people. And so my side is more behind the scenes. I like that part a lot better. And I always have to push myself to get out there. Of course, the financials, you know, math, science, you know, all that I can follow. I can do spreadsheets. But, you know, I do sometimes need to reach out for that business advice. And as when you are passionate, sometimes, you know, you're so happy doing what you're doing that you kind of don't look at numbers for a while. And then it's like, oh, God, well, we got to keep things going here. I mean, this business, I'll never get rich, but you still have to, you know, break even and make a small living.
Definitely. And just to going back to something you said before also, the math and science, you said that they were pushing girls in that. Is that just because there were limited girls at that time in the math and science field, so they were pushing it hard?
I think so. I think that was, you know, in the mid-80s, and that was when the big push was to get more girls into that, and there was a lot of career days just for girls going into engineering. There was incentives. It still is a male dominated field, and like I said, the women that do go into it tend to use that as a springboard to something else. I was actively involved in the Society of Women Engineers when I was an engineer, and that was a great group, and I still miss having that camaraderie. I feel like my profession now, I don't have a group to turn to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a restaurateur. I'm not a real, a chef at a restaurant. I'm not, I always try to find something, and it's right. Like I don't fit in even on the general business, because being in the food side of it, it's totally different. So
food and education and
when I have the yellow page guy used to come and want to sell me ads, and I said, if you can find me a place in the book, I'll go. And most of the time they really would come back and say, well, there's really no good fit for you.
That's so funny. They would surprise, they just didn't make something up to sell you on it. But I also found it interesting that you said that you went into engineering, but you already had kind of the food thing in the back of your mind. And you mentioned craft and some other things. So are there engineers in those positions? Is the chemical engineering who runs those departments in those kind of companies?
In many of them it does, because the engineering gives you the processing part. The chemical side gives you the reactions and how things interact and go together.
Yeah.
Really food is just science. It is a big chemistry experiment.
Yeah.
And how you put it together is where the engineering part comes in. A chemist who cooks tends to be very exacting, and they will not deviate, and it's like so extreme. But then if you put that engineer side in you, then you kind of get the fun of the cooking. You get more of the experimental side. You can kind of make the tweaks. And most people would think, with my background, that I would like baking more, because it's more precise and it's more like that experiment. But really, I do not like baking. I love cooking, because cooking, I can change at any moment. I can, tweak, I can change,
right,
I can
in the middle
interact,
of it.
I can, do whatever. But baking, you spend all this time, all this energy, all this ingredients, you put it in the pan, you hope the 45 minutes, an hour, that it comes out and something happened, and you start all over.
That's
what are you
funny.
Supposed to do with this? You can't fix it.
Right.
And one of the hardest classes I actually teach is Crock-Pot. Because for me, to turn everything over to this machine and hope just isn't, isn't part of the cooking. So that has been probably my most difficult, stressful class, which you think should be the least amount, right? But
well, that's interesting, though, on the cooking. So if it doesn't taste right in the middle of it, or smell right, or whatever, you can just add something to it to...
Well, and that's what my main thing on trying to teach people to cook is, one, everybody beats themselves up. If something doesn't come out, I did it wrong. I messed up. I don't know what I'm doing. And, that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know how to fix it. You get too uptight about it, and then you just think it's wrong and you can fix it. But there really is no good cook or bad cook. Everybody, I feel every day I step in the kitchen, every day I step behind the stove, I'm a beginner. I learn something new every single day. And a lot of people will tend to put me up on that expert pedestal level. And I always tell my husband, I said, I don't want to be on the pedestal, because it's too far to fall, So, I'm human like them. I just do it more and more. And
right.
So I don't have as many mistakes. I don't have as much, I have more knowledge. I can fix things quicker. But it's not that I'm any better than they are.
Right.
You evolve as a cook, and you got to keep that evolution going. And you got to practice. I mean, you pick up a flute today, you're not going to be able to play a concerto.
Right.
But if you start cooking a new recipe, you expect to have it done, to be perfect, to be taste exactly how it should. And if it doesn't, you're upset.
Yeah. That's a good analogy.
You have to make that about 4, 5, 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that Aunt May is always asked to make the same thing for the potluck? It's not that maybe she does it so well. She's just done it so many times that she's good at it.
Right.
So,
and I think that goes to a lot of things. Like yoga, they call it practice. You never are an expert at yoga. You're practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting analogy. So with the chemical engineering, how has that helped you create different things that are maybe not the norm of thinking? Or has it helped you do that?
again, the engineering is just, my mind is always going. You know, I put things together that other people never would. You know, mm-hmm. I have like this little, it's like a little computer in my brain. You know, you tell me something today and I read something here and it kind of goes in there and then it'll stew in there for a little while. And a couple of days later, I'm going to be able to come up with something, how I combine those two together. And I think that comes from the engineering. It also comes from your own inherent internal dialogue. And I tend to be a little more on the introverted side that way, where, you know, my best thinking and my best thoughts are, you know, inside of me. And when I have time to think about them, I don't really thrive as much as some people with the interaction and the crowds. And I find when I do too much of that in a given week, yeah, my creativity suffers. And then I have to take a couple days, a couple walks, a couple whatever to kind of get back inside myself. But yeah, it's, you know, it's like a big stew or soup in my mind, and it'll just all come together eventually. Kind of seeing that whole big picture as part of the engineering, you kind of, you see things how, in a much larger sense than most people just see what's in front of them.
Gotcha.
And they don't see, you know, what could happen.
The overhead view type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's cool. And I think the whole introvert thing, I think more people are naturally introverted and they pretend to be extroverts and that whole social thing, and then the imagination and creativity is stunted from that.
Well, and I think people have a misconception of introversion and extroversion.
Sure.
I mean, they think introverts are people who never speak up, that are, you know, never go anywhere, that are a little mousy and quiet, and it's not. Mm-hmm. I mean, the introvert is somebody who gains strength within themselves, and extrovert is somebody who thrives on the external world.
Right. Yeah, I'll definitely agree with that because I'm an introvert at heart. Mm-hmm. So just kind of kind of go through the process. So say someone bought me a cooking class for my birthday. Mm-hmm. So what would I expect coming in here for a class?
We have two major types of classes. The two classifications are demonstration and hands-on. A demonstration class, some people think about that like, oh, God, I don't want that. I'm not going to learn anything. But that is what I consider the lecture. And if you watch the Food Network, you're really participating in a demonstration class, but you can't interact, you don't get to taste, you can't, you know, clarify something, you're just kind of watching. Yeah. But we do, people watch, we have monitors that show the stoves, that show, you know, what I'm doing. We can really cover background on ingredients, all the little trip ups you would have. You know, it's just everybody's hearing the same thing. You get a lot of knowledge. Plus, then you get to taste it. You get to ask the questions. You get to, you know, see. You know, there are no outtakes. Sometimes in the middle of class, something does go wrong, and we just go right on, and where you never see that on the TV. So that gives people a lot of background, and people that learn that way are great. And that is our most popular class. It is the least time consuming, the least, you know, monetarily intense, you know, so it is the most popular. You definitely learn a lot of information there. The hands-on is where you're physically in the kitchen cooking, and that's more like your lab in high school science lab. Some things are yeast dough. I cannot teach yeast dough as a demonstration class because it's all about, you know, seeing, feeling, being right there in the moment. Knife skills, you can't do that as a demonstration. You have to physically have people cutting.
Right.
But, and so you work in, depending on the type of class, sometimes we have a more social class, like a cooking with friends, where just you and maybe, you know, another couple are in a group, and yeah, you want to learn to cook, but you also want to have a good time, so, you know, we're not too intense on the technique. Then we have our Saturday morning classes, which are usually 3-4 hours, where, you know, we're going to be pretty intense. You know, we're going to learn everything. We're going to learn every step of the way. We're going to feel it. We're going to see it. We're going to, you know, like yeast dough is a good example of that. We'll make 4 different doughs to see how they react. We'll form cinnamon rolls. We'll do dinner rolls. We'll do a pizza. We'll do a bread. So you kind of have that repetition. Mm. So you're doing the same thing over and over. So you finally get it.
Right. So on the demonstration versus hands-on, demonstration, like one-time classes, or are they ongoing, and then is the hands-on?
Most of our classes I do keep as a one-time individual, and you kind of piece them together the way you want, because I do find that people have difficulty committing to series. We do have a couple series right now. I'm in the middle of a Mediterranean diet demonstration cooking series, which is four classes every other week, and we're going over the different parts of the Mediterranean diet, so that has been a series. I also have a hands-on cooking 101 that we just introduced this fall. It's a six-week course every other week for 2 hours. And that's really getting everybody the basics of hands-on cooking with different recipes and different techniques. But for the most part, you know, they are individual, but they do go together. So okay. People kind of piece them the way they want to.
So they can mix and match. Everyone's correct. So busy, so.
Yeah.
So, and I know that you also teach kids. Kids are never easy. So why is it important to get the kids involved in the whole thing?
The whole, and my husband thinks I'm absolutely crazy when I do these kids classes. You know, we don't have kids, and so, you know, it's even harder because you're not around them on a regular basis. The part of the story, I guess, that I left out on about me is I started to cook, why I wanted to go into food. I started cooking probably when I was about 11 or 12 at a place in Merrillville, Indiana called Cuisine Unlimited.
As a job?
No, as a student.
Okay.
They had kids classes on Saturdays.
Oh, cool.
And that's really when I started to learn to cook and like the process. And I graduated to the adult classes pretty quickly after that. And when I was in college, then I helped a lady with some catering and meal, personal chef stuff then. So my whole thing of cooking started at a young age. And I think it's very important to instill that at a young age. And also the kids need to realize where food comes from. They just see it in a package. We, you know, in our camps, we'll make hamburgers one day. And I tell them we have to make sure the hamburger is not pink inside. And they all agree with me. They know that because that's safety, right? We instill that in them. But then when I ask them why we can't have the hamburger pink, but we can have steak pink, it takes us half an hour to realize that hamburger is ground up in a machine. I mean, they think it just comes off the cow like that. I really do. I mean, it sounds silly, but they really have no idea where things come from because everything is so sterile and packaged. And
because they pull up in the car and comes out the window.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, in our classes, we also make them wash dishes. We have them wipe down counters. And it's amazing how we teach dishwashing, and we have to teach how to wring out a rag. And, you know, at home, there may be loading a dishwasher, or, you know, parents get so busy that it's just easier to do it themselves than to have the kids do it. So it's very important to learn those skills and to get them off of all that prepared fast food. And I think if we get them at a younger age, we're much better, you know, much more inclined to have them as an adult cook.
Yeah. That's great. My youngest son did it over the summer and he really enjoyed it. So, and I think that started, even you had mentioned the cooking stuff on, mm-hmm. on TV, but he saw these other kids doing it at a young age. So he wanted to try
Although the TV, you know, the Food Network is a blessing and a curse.
Right.
I mean, I always know when I get a student who watches the Food Network too much. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the ones who watch it the most, I think, actually cook the least, or they get the bad habits because nobody's correcting them. If you're following them, and I cringe because so many of the videos online or the TV shows have very bad form and they're actually teaching you something wrong. Mm. But, you know, we think it's gospel, so.
Right. Well, yeah, if it's on the internet, it's right.
Exactly. So we're real careful when we do our own videos to be correct.
That's funny. So you mentioned that in the middle of this whole entrepreneurial thing, you had healthy eating and doing meals. So why is it so important, the healthy eating versus the packaged stuff, or what? What is the positives and negatives of being able to eat differently than we're all accustomed to?
Well, I think the bottom line, my whole overall philosophy is cooking automatically makes you healthier. I mean, just think about it. Anything that you make in your own kitchen from, you know, real raw ingredients is going to be better than anything you can get from a box or pre-mixed or whatever. You know, it's all been the convenience monster, I call it. You know, we all want things to be more convenient. We want to save time. We want to save money. We want things to taste good. And because of that, anything that's going to be prepared and put on a shelf has to have something put in it to keep it that way. And a lot of it is touted as being natural. but it's not natural in those amounts in our bodies. You know, maybe a little bit of this is fine, but now we're having it in 10 times the amount.
Right.
And when we went, when everything went fat-free, what happened to this country? We got bigger, right? There's more obesity now than there ever was. Mm-hmm. The more we get away from our, you know, our parents, our ancestors of having real vegetables and meats and things in our lives, we're getting less and less healthy. And it, we have to go back. And part of the whole thing about cooking from scratch is it is stress relieving. People think it's stressful, but it actually is stress relieving. It's the whole mindfulness, you know, movement. If you're in the kitchen, you're mindful. You know, it's reconnecting. We've become so disconnected with everything that I really feel like cooking is an area that we can get reconnected. And when you put good food into your body, you feel better. You have more energy, and overall, you'll spend less money.
I completely agree with that. Mm-hmm. And also, you'll probably eat less, too.
You do. At the beginning, it seems like you're going to spend a lot more money, but your body is a very smart thing. I mean, we really don't listen to our body enough. You were talking about yoga before. I mean, you know, in yoga, you really have to learn to, you know, feel what's in your body, and you learn those things. But our bodies crave things for certain reasons. And the brain is always telling you it needs something. So if you reach for a bag of chips and you start eating the chips, it goes into your system and everything that it was looking for, you know, the different organs will kind of go to your stomach and say, oh, does this have what I need? No. So it goes away. And finally, there's nothing in there. So it just leaves the body. But your liver still needs something. Your heart still needs something. Everything still needs something. So the brain, again, has to trigger hunger. So now you reach for something else. And as long as you keep reaching for junk, the body's still going to say, I'm hungry, I'm hungry, I'm hungry. But if you start feeding it whole grains, you put an apple in there, you put, you know, some protein. Now all those organs that want something grab that. They go to their little corner and they say, I'm happy. They stop bugging the brain. And now you're not hungry anymore. You feel good and you keep going. Food has to be processed in order for it to benefit us, but it needs to be processed by us, not by other people. And, you know, it takes a while. There's always that period of, you know, you're going to feel different. You're going to, what is that, a habit is, what, 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
I always say, you know, you're a male, so you don't really understand this, but women growing out their hair, you know, that in-between stage, you know, we hate it, so we're, should we get it recut again? Should we, you know, but you got to just make it through, or make it through the messy middle, people call it.
Right.
You just kind of persevere and kind of keep, you know, following the course. And but if you, you know, 2 or 3 days into it, you give in to the cookies or whatever, mm-hmm. you're still in that vicious cycle.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I have never heard the organ needs something.
Mm. Yeah, that's my analogy I've been using. I've been using that for the 6 years I've been teaching, and yeah. I do think that it's a good analogy, and I think it puts at home what people...
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do that in my classes. I really try to give people visuals. I think the more that I can give you a story or a visual, you're going to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Because just saying something, it's like, you know, well, a lot of my students actually say that I'm the Siri of the kitchen. So when they're cooking, they have my little voice in their head. What would Cheryl do? What would this? And, you know, I keep on... I'm a loop in their mind telling them what to do. So
yeah, that's cool. So going back to 21 years ago, 1996, and what you've learned over the time, is there something that you maybe have learned later in your career that you wish you would have done earlier?
I think the two biggest things that, you know, I struggled with early and probably still to some extent now. The first thing is being more of a cheerleader for myself. You know, again, I think it's that introversion. It's being that accidental entrepreneur. But, you know, I always like to be behind the scenes, you know, and I you don't want to bother people. You don't want to be that person that everybody's like, oh, good, look who's coming, you know. So, you know, I've always kind of stayed in the background, and I think being a little more out there would have been more helpful, and being more vocal early in my career. And the second thing is to ask for help. I mean, I, you know, pretty much have gone at this by myself for most of the years. I don't even, my husband and I, neither of us have family here, so I haven't even had family to rely back on. And, you know, some of the times that I've been in my kitchen cooking or doing things, you know, it's remarkable that I was here, but I didn't have anybody else to rely on to do that. And, you know, just to ask people in general, again, and, you know, it's kind of maybe an upbringing or, it's more not that I feel like I can do everything myself, but you never want to bother people or, you know, they don't want to do that. So,
right. Yeah. I think there's a fine line on that. Mm-hmm. You can't ask all the time, but definitely people do want to help, I think.
Right. And I think, you know, I think part of it is coming from a small family. I think when you come from a small family, you don't have that as much. I see people who have, like, the bigger extended families, they tend to be much more used to that because everybody's there and you kind of get that at a young age that people are just kind of helping you and that's how it should be.
Right.
But when you grow up in a more closed, smaller group, you don't get that at a young age, and so you have to build that in.
Yeah. Yeah, those are actually both good, very good pieces of advice there. So I'm sure you have to be creating different things at all times. You can't do the same thing all the time. So where do you think your big pieces of inspiration come from? You said earlier it's kind of comes in from different spaces and you kind of create it yourself, but are there specific things that you can do or you do that do give you some of that inspiration?
Well, there's lots of inspiration out there. I think the hardest thing is kind of not getting sucked into mainstream inspiration. And what I mean on that for cooking especially, there's too much out there. And I think that's why people are not doing it. I mean, Facebook, every other thing is one of those videos showing you how to make some food and it looks wonderful, but you know, there's some trip hole there. There's recipes all over the place. I call people recipe collectors. You know, they have piles and piles of recipes, but they don't make anything and they think everything has to be new and, you know, different and all the cooking shows and all of this and it is really overwhelming. I mean, I get probably 20 magazines myself, but I've been able to, I can just kind of page through them and I now can glean the little bits of information and trying to get what the hot topic is. Sometimes it's at the grocery store. I'll be looking at people's carts or I'll be seeing how they're struggling or, you know, what they're doing or not doing. I try to keep up on the health and nutrition news because I think that ties in a lot. Actually, an interesting inspiration has been this past year we have done a book club. It's called Read and Eat. And so we've been doing different books. A lot of them have been memoirs. Some have been culinary history that have something to do with cooking and culinary, but then they have recipes in them. And I have a book discussion leader, and then I do the recipes in there. And it's been really interesting, some of the things I've learned there.
That sounds fun.
And it's made me read, and I haven't read in ages. You know, that's one of the things that kind of gets pushed off.
Yeah.
And lately I've been trying to listen to, you know, more maybe podcasts or books on audio when I take a walk or something, just to try to, the more stuff you can get into you, the more that's going to come out. And I always know when I've been too cloistered, because then that creativity does kind of wane or you feel like there's nothing new.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, I can do it in a day or two. I mean, most people need like a whole week. I mean, if I can just take a day to kind of ease off or to just do something different, I'm usually inspired again.
Cool. That's very good. So outside of business, I know you said that cooking is still kind of what you do. Is there anything other than cooking that you enjoy, you and your husband enjoy?
I mean, it's been so many years that I've just been so wrapped up in this and what I do. We are big into the environment. We do like to go out on, you know, hikes. We support organizations like the Nature Conservancy and Audubon. So, you know, we'll do bird watching. You know, I like to, when I'm home, I like to just spend time outside. We have a pond in our backyard with a waterfall, and so I like to just listen to that, to watch the birds. Like I said, we have a little, you know, wildlife sanctuary in our backyard with that creek. But yeah, just kind of relaxing. I do have a sister in California that comes to visit sometimes, so we visit with her. And, you know, I am a homebody. I just really am. I will admit that. It's not...
It's not a bad thing.
No, but, you know, I'm like the Gladys Kravitz of the neighborhood. You know, I know everything here and at home, everything that's going on, because I'm the only one that's always around, right? but I think, you know, just meeting all the people that I meet with my classes and with my business, that just really kind of keeps you going and gives you different things in your life.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So is there anything that I didn't ask you that you want to touch on or bring up?
Well, I did want to mention, you know, you were talking about changing gears and things like that. And so, you know, we're kind of, in the last year, we're kind of in our latest kind of revamp of what's going on after 6 years of cooking and seeing what's going on. Now my biggest push is healthy community cooking to get my tagline I like is get NWI cooking, you know, like a hashtag. But a real push to try to partner with other organizations and similar businesses in the area to work together to really get people back in the kitchen. From health organizations to local grocery stores to the schools. Schools don't have, you know, home ec anymore.
Right.
And so I'm really trying to champion this whole community cooking and trying to give people easy recipes, ideas, instead of going to Blue Apron or going to, you know, some internet site, get it locally and be able to see what's going on, to ask questions, support some of the local businesses. You know, I get a lot of my supplies from local places. You know, I get olive oil and balsamic from Tasty Olive. I go to, I just was at, Angelo's Prime. I needed some Italian things, and they bailed me out. It was 2:00 in the afternoon, and I needed something for a class that night, and I was trying to figure out where to go, and I ran in there. But, you know, we're getting away from that hometownness, and I really think by bringing that together, it's going to work for all of us. And again, to simplify the whole cooking process for people, and so they don't have to run around the internet. They don't have to collect recipes. They don't have to, you know, do all of that. They can get a resource right here. And a lot of people, when they find me, they say, you know, I didn't even know you were here, and you're right here in Northwest Indiana.
Right.
You know, they're going to Chicago for classes. They're paying for parking. They're paying double what I charge for a class. Just because they don't know we're here.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we tend to think that about our area, unfortunately. It's not going to be there. I have to look somewhere else. So instead of looking in your own back door, you don't even,
right.
You know, you just go to the big city or you go somewhere mm-hmm. else, where I think we, and a lot of the small businesses, we need to work together better. And I think that's what's great about, you know, your podcast and things like that to help people learn about things. But, you know, we all tend to be our little silos, and I know we're all busy, but, you know, we really do need to build a better network, and I'm hoping to kind of put the whole cooking piece together in there.
And that's so interesting, because I think you're the 24th, 25th interview that I've done, and almost everybody has said the same thing about how either we have started working together as a team, even competing businesses, you know, they're together is much better, able to grow than alone. So I love to hear that from everybody, that we want to keep getting involved with each other so we can help each other. So
yeah, the biggest thing is the connections. And like I said, being, you know, when you're especially a solo entrepreneur and you're pretty much in your business, you know, 24 hours a day, you don't get out and make those connections. And so then you have to, you know, find somebody to make those for you. And, you know, this past year, you know, I work now with National Marketing Group, and they've really opened the doors for me. I never knew what I didn't have. You know, it's kind of one of those things. I mean, I had thought I just needed help with social media. You know, you're like, oh, I need help with these. This Facebook is getting too much or whatever. And then, you know, you don't realize that there's so much out there. I did the food truck fest in Portage, and, you know, I never would have thought I would have done something like that. So you have to, you know, it took me, we just did the Gourmet Goddess, who you've interviewed. She was just here for a class a few weeks ago. And, you know, she was in business 5 years. And, I mean, I just connected with her, like, this spring.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I didn't know she was there. I didn't know that we would help each other, but it was just getting to send the note or to make that connection or,
again,
thinking somebody else is too busy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everybody out there, whatever you think just overcome that. And right.
Or that they don't want to help you. I think that's part of it too. Well, they're too close of a business to mine. They're not going to help me. But
the worst thing they can do is, one, not get back to you, or two, just say, no, I'm sorry, not at this time.
Exactly.
And as a person, if you're asked that, that's what you should say too. You know, always, I always try to get back to somebody, even if it's to say, I'm not the person, I'm not interested, but to leave people hanging is not good either. But reach, you know, I'm saying this for myself as much as for everybody else, you know, reach out to somebody new.
Yeah.
And you know, it might be a good benefit.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So what is the best way to get a hold of you? Tell us where you're located, and if someone wants to register for class or look what the available classes are, how do they find you?
Well, we are located in Portaloo Plaza in Highlands, so our address is 2106 45th Street. I'm in the old San Fratello's space, so a lot of people still know where San Fratello's Pizza was in Highland before they moved. The one thing I will say is we did move 2.5 years ago, but our sign is still above our old place. So if you go to a place that says for lease, come around the corner. And then our phone number is 219-922-4534. Our website is mrsdornbergs.com. And we also have our Facebook at Mrs. Dornbergs. I have Twitter and Instagram also. Classes, our class schedule is online. There is an option to register online. We also try to keep up the availability of what's left in the class, so it'll tell you if there's any space or if it's full.
Awesome. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mark. It was fun.
Cool.